It's Wednesday, August 12th. It's the biggest decision you can make before Election Day, and Joe Biden's made it. We start here. The former vice president makes his VP pick, and it's an historic one.
You could not find a better 180 degrees off Mike Pence than Kamala Harris.
What Kamala Harris brings to a Democratic ticket and where her vulnerabilities lie. A vaccine isn't possible until next year, right? So why does Russia say it's already got one?
Russia wants to sell this vaccine as much as it wants to use it in their own population.
Scientists are hoping cutting corners isn't contagious too, and there are lots of masks out there. Well, which ones actually work?
This one here is fleece. You see lots of little particles.
One study measures how much of the virus you can spread around and says one of these models is worse than wearing no mask at all. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. There are very few stories that will prompt political reporters in Washington to get more gumshoe detective than a vice presidential pick.
Susan Rice has been a hot topic here because she's rumored to be one of the front runners.
For weeks, Democrats have been speculating who Joe Biden would pick as his running mate. Some of the hottest names were Senator Tammy Baldwin, Senator Kamala Harris, and former UN Ambassador Susan Rice.
Do you know if you're in the running? Are you ready to do it? If someone asks you to do it, what's the scoop?
Well, first of all, thank you, Whoopi, and all of you for having me back. It's great to be on The View again.
And so reporters began staking them out, like literally following their motorcades around town, watching any flight, literally any flight on the radar, heading into Wilmington, Delaware, where the former vice president resides, all to figure out who might be coming to get that final handshake.
This is an ABC News special report.
Yesterday afternoon, we learned he had made his decision. People called up their sources. We learned he was also calling those who didn't get the job, but none of them would give up the name. And so despite all the prodding under the sun, Joe Biden announced his pick yesterday afternoon on his terms.
The former vice president and presumptive nominee of the Democratic Party has chosen Kamala Harris.
And of course, you know who it is now. Kamala Harris, the senator from California, 55 years old, the one-time rival for the Democratic nomination herself, is now Joe Biden's running mate. And with that, let's get a discussion going here. We are joined by ABC's deputy political director, Mary Ellis Parks, Harvard professor, Leah Wright Rigger, and former Democratic senator from the great state of North Dakota, Heidi Heitkamp's with us, also an ABC News contributor. And Senator Heitkamp, what do you think of the pick? Was this what you expected?
I think yesterday was a very bad day for Donald Trump. I think this was a brilliant pick. A lot of people think that it's all about picking the state, you know, whether, you know, everybody says, well, he's going to carry California no matter what. And I think the VP pick in this case, it was so critical, number one, to look at a generational transition, but also to respond to who, in fact, our base is. It's African-American women. It is women activists. It is people who care about kids. You know, I've known Kamala since she was Attorney General of California. She just could not have been a better pick. I'm very excited about this.
Mary Alice, from the strategy standpoint, do we have a sense of why he did decide to choose Kamala Harris? What were the factors here?
I think this is a pretty safe pick. I think to me, it projects quite a lot of confidence from the Biden campaign. To the senator's point, and no one's worried about a Democrat taking California. And she's someone that already has such a national profile.
I stand before you today to announce my candidacy for President of the United States.
She resonates with Democratic moms, I agree, with Black voters, though probably more actually with older Black voters. I think there's a little bit of a question mark about whether she's going to provide the energy and enthusiasm bump with younger Black voters that the Biden campaign could probably use too. But to me, this is the campaign saying, we feel pretty good that we have this.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about how this affects the turnout among different constituencies. But also, let's dwell on the fact that this is the first woman of color this high up on a ticket in presidential history. Professor Wright Rigger, what did that bring to this whole selection process?
Sure. And not just the first Black woman to be in the VP slot, but the first Asian American woman to be in the VP slot.
As an Indian American, I can't tell you what this feels like.
which a lot of times we forget, but is equally important because Kamala Harris has really emphasized that as part of her identity, part of who she is.
Wow. Someone who looks like us on a presidential ticket. That's crazy.
So I think this really matters, and it also really matters in terms of thinking about who are the types of people that she's trying to appeal to. You know, the base is really important, thinking about who the base of the party is. You know, Black women have been pushing for this and really pushing for a Black woman on the ticket for a very long time.
In a strongly worded letter, more than 100 prominent Black men, including Sean Combs, Charlemagne the God, and George Floyd's attorney, warned Biden bluntly that, quote, failing to select a Black woman in 2020 means you will lose the election.
Biden, so this is all part of this larger kind of strategy. The one thing that I would point out, though, this is kind of a safe pick, right? It's kind of a revenge of the moderate or a revenge of the center, which we do know is really important for this election.
We have to stop militarization of police, but that doesn't mean we get rid of police. Of course not.
But what does that mean for progressives, for lefties, for real on-the-ground activists that, you know, two people, Biden and Harris, are now making up the ticket? And these are two people that these wings of the party have had really big problems with in the past.
I want to make this point. Number one, how remarkable it is that we have a multiracial woman and we're talking about her as a safe pick. How far have we come? It should make everybody in the country smile. Everybody talks about her experience on Intel or her experience on the Judiciary Committee. I served on Homeland Security.
I've not received that information. Do you have that today?
No, you have not asked me for it, so I do not have it. But
no, I
asked
him
for it.
Okay, so again, by the end of next week, please.
And I think that toughness is a huge part of why she got picked. And I think it's a huge part of why she's such a smart pick for this ticket.
Right, but of course you're going to say that, Senator. Like, you want Joe Biden to win the White House. You're going to say, yeah, whoever he picked, that's great. Can we talk about the stuff that Biden did not do, right? He did not pick Gretchen Whitmer from Michigan or Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin. So if he's looking for extra votes, I guess I'm asking, Senator, is he looking for extra votes? Because you could say he should look to white suburbs or that he should look to fire up voters of color. He clearly didn't do the first one, but does Kamala Harris actually psych people up?
Well, you know, I'm kind of the theory that the vice president can only hurt you on a ticket. Mm. Everybody wants to focus on whether you're going to win. Biden did the right thing. He looked for somebody who could step in day one. He looked for somebody who would be a partner and have the toughness and the absolute incredible intelligence to lead this country that he could say, I have a problem. I want you to go fix this. And the thing that thrills me the most is the work that she's done with victims and the work that she's done on criminal justice reform. She is not one dimensional. Okay. That she's just the multiracial pick. She is an incredibly qualified candidate for president of the United States and certainly qualified to be our vice president.
They want to defund and they want to abolish.
And we've seen President Trump hammer over and over again this falsehood, but a political point, that Joe Biden and all the Democrats want to defund the police.
If he ever got in, you'd be abolishing police. You could just watch, because he's not going to be running anything. People around him will. And
you used to oppose the legalization of marijuana. Now you don't. You used to oppose outside investigations of police shootings. Now you don't.
And here you have this former prosecutor with that's taken some political heat for being tough on crime in the past.
But when you had the power, why didn't you try to effect change then?
That's going to respond to that. She's probably going to respond to it a ton.
I made a decision to become a prosecutor for two reasons. One, I've always wanted to protect people and keep them safe. And second, I was born knowing about how this criminal justice system in America has worked in a way that has been informed by racial bias.
It's not easy, but I actually think her past in some ways makes her much harder to attack from this White House.
Yeah, so is this a tough pick to deal with if you're President Trump or Vice President Pence?
Oh, absolutely.
I can't. Let me tell you, you could not find a better 180 degrees off Mike Pence than Kamala Harris.
Joe Biden and the Democratic Party have been overtaken by the radical left. So given their promises of higher taxes, open borders, socialized medicine, and abortion on demand, it's no surprise that he chose Senator Harris to be his running mate.
Mike Pence, old school, you know, I don't want to be in a room with a woman who's not my, you know, mother or my wife. You know, Kamala Harris represents everything that Mike Pence isn't.
Kamala Harris ran for president by rushing to the radical left, embracing Bernie's plan for socialized medicine.
They dropped this ad immediately when the pick was announced, which nothing should surprise me anymore, but I actually was pretty surprised. It was so negative.
I thought she was the meanest, the most horrible, most disrespectful of anybody in the U.S. Senate. She's also known, from what I understand, as being just about the most liberal person in the U.S. Senate.
And to me, actually, what that says is they aren't really sure what to do, because she's actually going to be really hard to attack and really hard to strategize around. They like threw everything at the wall right at the beginning, which is doesn't look good for them.
Vice President Biden, do you agree today? Do you agree today that you were wrong to oppose busing in America then?
No.
Do you agree?
I did not oppose busing in America.
What I was going to say is that I think that, you know, we should all be looking forward to the debates, because we got a preview of that, not just in all these Senate testimonies and hearings with Kamala Harris, but we got a real preview of this during the presidential primaries. With her own running mate.
Because your city council made that decision. It was a local decision.
So that's where the federal government must step in. That's why we have the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act. That's why we need to pass the Equality Act.
One of the things that we also see is that, again, that Donald Trump and Mike Pence have no idea how to, quote unquote, handle her. The one area I think where Kamala Harris has been, you know, has tripped up, has been with the prosecutorial issues or in the debate around that, and also with activists in the past.
It was a chance for Joe Biden to further his ties with the Black and Hispanic communities. But in a discussion over immigration, the former vice president seemed to suggest the Black community lacks diversity of thought.
What you all know, but most people don't know, unlike the African-American community, with notable exceptions, the Latino community is an incredibly diverse community with incredibly different attitudes about different things.
But there's also a potential for her to come out really, really strong, particularly if they put together a policy agenda, if she and Biden put together a policy agenda that really just straightforward addresses many of the issues that activists have called them on in the past.
Yeah, so difficult for a VP pick to build a constituency all by themselves. In fact, not every political scientist is even convinced VP picks change your poll numbers. And with that in mind, there is one other big piece of political news today. Our partners at 538, right now as we post this podcast, are unveiling their big anticipated presidential forecast model. They basically throw together poll numbers and historical trends like the economy, and they try to predict who is going to win on November 3rd. It's like a weather forecast. It's not a sure thing, and it can change based on circumstances. But as of this morning, a few months out, 538's forecast shows Joe Biden with a 71% chance, that's a 7 out of 10 shot, of beating Donald Trump. And those percentages were calculated before he picked Kamala Harris. All right, no more politics. Next up on Start Here, how Russia got a vaccine by skipping all the tests you do for a vaccine. That's after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Whoever is president, the biggest issue they'll face is how to get Americans back on track after the devastation of this pandemic.
The American Academy of Pediatrics reports nearly 180,000 cases in children in the last 4 weeks. That's up 90% in just 1 month.
Yesterday, we saw several new signs that as much as officials have acted like reopening will work just fine, as long as people are gathering, particularly without masks, it won't be fine.
Across Cherokee County, Georgia, at least 925 students and staff are quarantined after 60 people tested positive. Masks required for teachers, but only recommended for students.
And if we do not dramatically change policies and habits, that really just leaves one silver bullet to avoid COVID-19, a vaccine. And the fastest timelines for vaccines don't have them getting into the hands of Americans until next year. But yesterday, in a surprise announcement, Russia said it's got a vaccine and it's all ready to be rolled out. Kirit Radia is ABC's foreign editor. He was also based in Moscow for years. So Kirit, I mean, does Russia seriously have a vaccine? Can you break down this announcement for me?
Well, Brad, they say they do. Putin came out yesterday and said that they have developed a vaccine and that they're going to even roll it out in the coming days and begin administering it.
The vaccine, said to be based on the same technology that helped them previously create an Ebola vaccine, and will go to key workers like teachers and medics first.
Its efficiency has been tested. 100% of the people developed immunity.
I think anybody who's been following the search for a vaccine will tell you, and all the experts, there's a lot of questions about just how safe this thing is.
For the first time in the U.S., phase 3 vaccine trials are now getting underway. 30,000 Americans are expected to volunteer for Moderna vaccine clinical trials.
There are several steps that you need to go through to get a vaccine approved, particularly in the U.S., you know, to make sure that A, it's as effective as it should be, but B, it's not going to cause more harm than what you're trying to cure, that it's not, the side effects are not more harmful. And the last stage, you know, stage 3, is a large-scale trial.
A new study published in The Lancet finding the experimental Oxford vaccine, one of 23 vaccines currently in human trials, appears safe and activates the immune system to respond to the virus.
In the cases of Moderna and the Oxford vaccine that are all being developed around the world right now, those are trials that are at least 30,000 people. You know, in Russia, theirs was a fraction of that, and that's why they're able to get out ahead of everybody.
Dr. Fauci shared his reaction exclusively with National Geographic.
I hope that the Russians have actually definitively proven that the vaccine is safe and effective. I seriously doubt that they've done that.
Well, and I thought it was telling, right, that they used the name Sputnik as a way to describe this vaccine. That, of course, was the space vessel that beat the U.S. in the space race. So if this is not a medical breakthrough any more than Moderna or Pfizer or anyone else, what is this? Is this just Russia making announcements, or does this have big ramifications for the rest of the world?
Well, it has huge ramifications. I mean, right now, if you'll bear with me on an analogy here, you know, it's like a NASCAR race and there's been an accident in the world and we're under a yellow flag right now and the whole world is paused. And the only thing that can get us back to a green flag is a vaccine. And so there's a huge, huge race here because not everybody's going to get that green flag at the same time. And the first people that do and can get back to racing are going to have a huge advantage over everybody else, not just in their economies, but in their national security. And, you know, the first person who can get a vaccine to market stands to make a lot of money, too. You know, Russia wants to sell this vaccine as much as it wants to use it in their own population.
Once you understand the mechanics for how it works and you see the results of clinical studies, I think many people will be convinced.
There's always risks with new vaccines because, again, these are things that usually you need a large amount of data to be able to say, okay, we're seeing some problems with this here. And if the Russians haven't done that in this case, and they aren't probably as sure as others might be about the side effects, you know, there are some risks with this. But I think that from the Russian perspective, again, you know, this is a big national issue for them to be able to get out ahead of everybody else here.
People say, why aren't the Americans doing that? Well, because we have a way of doing things in this country that we care about safety and we care about efficacy.
But my question, Kirit, is if Russia starts giving out this vaccine and it works, isn't that going to put pressure on other countries to get their stuff out faster, to either ignore guidelines, to push the ball? Like, are there destabilizing effects here?
I think for sure there's a lot of pressure now that Russia has jumped out ahead of this here.
This evening, I'm pleased to announce that we have reached an agreement with Moderna to manufacture and deliver 100 million doses of their coronavirus vaccine candidate.
There are efforts by the U.S. and by other private investors to actually begin producing these vaccines even before they're approved, just on the off chance that they work, so that they can market them and can get them to scale quickly, so that, you know, that they can get in the hands of consumers. So we may only be talking about a difference of a few months here. Now, a few months is a big difference, but again, I think from what everybody in the U.S. and in Europe, for example, are saying, it's important to get this right, because you could be causing a whole host of other problems if you get it wrong.
Yeah, although in Vladimir Putin's eyes, it appears that green flag is up, and if a few pit crew members get run over or suffer really bad medical consequences in the long term, we don't know yet, so be it, perhaps in the eyes of the Kremlin. Here at Radia, fascinating stuff. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
And one last thing. Recently, Duke University conducted one of the most useful experiments ever. Which types of masks actually work? It's like the simplest study in the world. They set up this box with a big hole in the front where you can stick your head. Then with a laser and some boards, they measured the particles flying out of a person's mouth as they spoke. Then they did the same thing as that person wore a bunch of different masks.
Day 5, surgical mask, trial 1.
They had 14 in total. The best ones were masks that were more or less created for keeping particles inside. Those fitted N95 masks, really good. The material in surgical masks is also great at catching droplets. Authorities continue to ask people not to hoard medical-grade stuff, though. So what about the home remedies?
Even though COVID's happening right now, I'm still going to be fashionable.
There's a lot of these masks that are made out of paper, out of cloth.
Well, poly-cotton blends proved quite effective as long as they are tight to your face. The more layers they have, the better they are.
The valved mask, which last week was banned from several airlines, in the middle of all 14 tested.
You know those masks with the little vents built in? They're cloth masks, but they got that little plastic circle on one side. Well, those vent masks performed surprisingly poorly.
It protects you, the wearer, but it doesn't protect other people if by chance you have the disease and you don't know it.
Bandanas were also much less effective than the others. Now, the researchers said they were thinking less about scoring all these than about showing how easy this is to measure. Overall, their message was, wear something. It's better than nothing. Except for one type.
The popular and fashionable gaiter, prior to the pandemic, often found on runners.
Well, the fleece neck gaiter that Duke studied actually appeared to create more problems than no mask at all.
This one here is fleece. You see lots of little particles.
See, by breaking big droplets into smaller little droplets, it doesn't necessarily spread around more virus, but suddenly these tiny particles are able to float across the room more easily. So scientists aren't explicitly recommending against any of these. They do say, please, whatever you do, don't pick a mask that you're just going to wear around your neck all day. News you can use right there. Hey, as Kamala Harris appears with Joe Biden today, as President Trump continues to hold news briefings, we will have all that up to the minute live on abcnews.com or the ABC News app. And also, check out the new forecast model at 538.com. You will find yourself looking at how these numbers go up and down between now and Election Day. I'm Brad Bilkey. See you tomorrow.